Michael. I want to play a game. So far, in what could loosely be called your life, you've made a living watching others. Society would call you an informant, a rat, a snitch. I call you unworthy of the body you possess, of the life that you've been given. Now we will see if you are willing to look inward rather than outward, to give up the one thing you rely on in order to go on living. The device around your neck is a death mask. The mask is on a spring timer. If you do not locate the key in time, the mask will close. Think of it like a Venus flytrap.
Welcome back to the Hide and Fear Horrors podcast, where we review horror movies and horror franchises. I'm Mark.
I'm Tawan.
I'm Maria.
And today we're reviewing Saw 2, released in 2005, less than a year after the last one. And it was directed by Darren Lee Bushman and screenplay by Lee Whannell and Darren Lee Bushman. Maria, you give the people the plot summary.
In pursuit of the enigmatic vigilante serial killer known as Jigsaw, Detective Eric Matthews and his team are faced with the urgent challenge of capturing this elusive murderer. Their mission is to rescue 8 individuals confined within an abandoned house, all at risk of falling victim to Jigsaw's sadistic and lethal trials. Adding a further layer of complexity, one of the 8 is none other than Matthews' own son, Daniel, selected by Jigsaw to assess their moral fiber. Compounded by the threat of nerve gas coursing through the premises, time becomes an even more critical factor in this high-stakes scenario.
So Saw 2. I remember when I originally saw Saw 2, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if it was going to be a continuation, that we were going to see what happened to Lee Whannell's character after a door was slammed on him. So when it started and there's like a whole group now, I was like, oh, okay. And it kind of made me feel like I was a hypocrite, because my favorite part of Saw 1 was how it felt so isolated with just those 2 characters being tortured and we're just focused on them. And now we're in this group setting and it just like made it better. You got to have more reactions and more personalities, and it did that thing where it started to grow out and develop the universe, because now we're meeting all these other characters. And then that twist at the end that Amanda is an apprentice was just like, what the hell? Right? And when you watch it for the first time and you see that, you're like, oh my God. Oh my God. Which also like makes rewatching the first one better, because now you're watching those Amanda scenes and you're like, oh, okay, now I see it. But what about you, Maria? What were your thoughts when you first saw two, and what were you thinking on this rewatch?
I mean, I thought the same thing. When I first watched it, I was like, oh my God, no way, it's Amanda. Because I was also not expecting it. And I like how in this movie, I mean, you basically kind of did see what happened in that room when it was closed. Like, the guy died. and I thought it was pretty cool that it kind of ended where it started, I guess. Though I thought the traps, I mean, I did like the whole idea that they're like in a house, but the traps seemed a little bit like random. And you also, and I feel like there was kind of technically no way to survive the traps. You know, I guess in the first movie, technically, you know, Jigsaw's supposed to like give you a fighting chance, but here it didn't really seem like they had much of a chance. But I mean, I do agree with what you said, that it is kind of better having more people, because you get more drama, I guess. You get more of the fighting, you get more of like, there's more tension. And yeah, I just thought it was, I mean, I liked it. It's different from the first.
What about you, Tuan? What are your thoughts on Saw 2?
Yeah, Saw 2 is still to this day my favorite out of the whole series. Like, they definitely upped the ante with it, and just the way that the story went throughout this one, and we get to like the ending point, and Jigsaw says, and you know, Jigsaw basically reveals to Eric that he wouldn't just, you know, take his time and whatnot, and that his son was in like a safe place, and we go through the whole little flashbacks and stuff and see that he was there in the room with them the whole time. Like, that whole little twist at the end, like, I was not expecting that, like, when I first watched this one. And because at the time, like, I had only seen the traps for Saw. I never really, like, watched the movies. I would just know about the traps because it was kind of like Final Destination to me. Like, we're coming to see what the traps are. But when I went back, like, years ago and, like, sat down and watched all of them, that was crazy to me how that, like, went about. And also the Amanda reveal as well in this one. So those two things were really cool, and I also like the concept of like the it's the trap house. Like, it actually is a trap house. I like the concept of how they went about that and using these people, and also just how later on you see how they are a little more integral to the story as well in other movies. A lot of callbacks to come back to this one for like the next couple of movies that we're going to be watching in the series. And I think one more thing is just like they, you know, up the ante a bit with what we actually got in terms of some of the traps, like coming from the first one to this one and showing how like even more brutal that Jigsaw can be to his victims.
Well, since you mentioned traps, Tawan, why don't you tell Maria and I, and everyone listening, what were some standout traps for you? / kills.
So, for me in this one, now, I personally don't have a fear of needles, but that needle pit trap will forever be disgusting to me, just for like, how it, like, looked, and like how good the actress, I'm thinking her name was Shawnee Smith, how good she like sold being thrown into like a pit of needles. Like, she really sold that in the way she, you know, her reactions and everything. But that one obviously definitely like sticks in my head. Like, that's for me, that's like up there with the reverse bear trap. Like, I feel like if people know about Saw, like, they probably have seen that one in addition to, like, the reverse bear trap. So that one was one that was definitely, that I definitely remember. As far as kills, one trap that did kill someone was Obi, however, I forget to pronounce his name, when he went to go retrieve the antidote and ended up in like a fire pit, basically. Anything where anybody gets burned alive is like crazy to me. And because, not that I have a fear of it, but I feel like that's one of the worst ways to go out, and just not having an option to escape and being so enclosed in it. You couldn't really do anything about it. Now, one trap that I like because of how stupid it was I forget her name. when she put her hands in like inside the glass box to try to get the antidote out, then she stuck her other hand in there. That will forever be so hilarious to me. Because I know, like, she was delusional at that point in time because they were under the nerve gas. But I don't know. I feel like she could have thought that through a little bit better.
What about you, Maria? What are some traps that stood out for you? / kills.
I think the beginning trap, the one with the guy, he has to, like, you know, get the key that's behind his head. I feel like that one in general is just kind of like, I guess it's kind of like the bear trap from the first movie. You automatically recognize it. And I also agree with what Tuan said, that syringe scene. I do not like needles. I hate needles. So that, to me already, I was like, oh my God, it's awful. And the way, you know, they're kind of sticking out of her. And I wonder if, like, she was expecting that. You know what I mean? Like, if she was expecting... Well, I guess I just wonder what idea she had for that trap. You know?
It made no sense.
I mean, it didn't. Because it wasn't, like, innovative at all. It's literally just, like... a hole filled with needles and you gotta dig through it. I don't know, but
I'm more surprised that she found the key. Every time I watch it, like, I was just always surprised that she even found it.
True. I wonder if she knew where it was and that's why she was like, oh my God.
I always thought that because she was in it. I wonder, did she kind of have an idea?
I mean, she must have. That's why I'm saying, like, I wonder if she was like surprised that he, because he just grabbed her and threw her in there, and I wonder if she was like not expecting that.
Yeah, definitely. Then she couldn't have,
right?
Because he was crazy.
He was crazy. But I mean, to be honest though, I think in the beginning she said that she was a junkie, so I feel like it would have made sense if the trap was for her. Mm-hmm. But it was also not an easy trap, because I would not definitely would not have done that. But compared to like the other traps, I feel like for example, the girl who got her hand stuck in that box, there was no way she was gonna survive that. You know? Without like cutting her wrists, or
she could have a little bit. See, for me with that one, if she had just used her other hand on the same one, she could have like held the little things open while she gets the syringe.
Yeah, I don't know why she put her other hand in if she had already like fucked up the syringe, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, why would you have her in there if you're gonna have her die in a stupid, kind of like stupid way, you know? Like, it seemed like she was just kind of there as an embellishment, really. Well, we're not talking about the characters. But anyway, yeah, I agree. Like, that trap was stupid. And yeah, I think that's really it, to be honest.
Yeah, the needle trap is definitely one that sticks out for me. No pun intended. Because that's just, I don't think I would have been able to do it. But also, the first trap we see where the guy has to, like, gouge out his eye. I'm just like, I think I could have done it. I think I could have took my eye out. What about you guys? Could you have done it?
No, I could not.
You wouldn't have? I mean, look at the alternative.
He got out easy. It was real quick.
No, Maria, would you have done it?
Eye stuff always is crazy to me. I can't do anything dealing with the eye.
Maria, would you?
I agree. I would not have been able to do it. Because not only do I have to take out my eye, I have to put my hand in there to get the key. I would have been passed out already just from like the pain and like the vomiting and nah.
Like, I'm like a bitch at the eye doctor. Like, they can't even put, like, they be trying to put the little shit in my eye, the eye drops and shit. I'll be moving.
I mean, I say I can do it, but I can't wear contacts because I can't touch my eyes. So,
me either.
So, obviously, I don't know, but those are my go-to. And then like the whole again, the whole premise of everyone, because the house itself was one massive trap. And I love that setting. I don't know. But let's move on to the character section. And let's start with the character. I put this character on here only because he caused most of like the drama in the later half of the movie because he was being stupid. And that's Xavier. Like he, if they would all just work together, they all could have got out. But what does he want to do? He wants to cut people's necks off, and then he cuts his own neck off, and now he's dying. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. You're being super, super toxic masculine, and you die because of it. But what about you, Twan? What were your thoughts on Xavier?
Yeah, Xavier was, like, actually crazy. Like, you know, you see some crazies, throughout, like, these movies a bit, and also, like, in this universe as a whole. And besides, like, people like Kramer, like John Kramer and Amanda, like Xavier was like actually like just like batshit, like trying to when they were in this like trap or game or whatnot, he was not trying to listen to anything. Like he was just being and I don't think there's a way to be practical, but he was being very impractical about the situation and the way he was trying to maneuver around it all. Like, yes, they could have easily got through a good amount of this if they did work together, but he wanted to be, like, in charge and a leader so bad that he threw Amanda in the pit trap. He put Obi in made him go inside, like, the fire pit one. He saw Addison have her hands inside the box and didn't help. Like he was only in it for himself. And then even when it came down to it even more, he was like, he decided to cut off part of his neck so that he could get the code and everything like that. So he was in it to win it. I give him that, but he was also very crazy.
Maria, what are your thoughts on Xavier?
I agree with what Tuan said. He was crazy. They definitely could have gone. I don't understand why he had to kill people just to see the number behind their necks.
Literally.
Like, yeah, I 1000% don't understand why he had to do that. And, you know, and at the end, it's so funny because, like, Amanda was right. She was like, how the hell are you going to see your own number if everybody's fucking dead? And I guess it's like, not that it's cool, but it's like, you know, like he was literally just trying to survive. And I'm assuming the gas is what kind of made him really, you know, lose it, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing I was leaning it with too, was that fucking nerve gas.
Yeah, but he was just being stupid, to be honest. Like he didn't even have to throw Amanda in that pit. I'm pretty sure they could have all held, you know, done like a little, like, if they all held on to each other, or if somebody held on to someone, they could have put someone, like, in there, and they would have tried to find the, you know what I mean? Like, it did not have to be that hard. Mm-hmm. And then not to mention, like, the whole glass box, I'm pretty sure he could have helped that, I don't even remember what her name was, but I'm pretty sure he could have helped that girl out of that box. But I mean, I guess that's the whole point, right? He's you know, he's in the trap for a reason. So yeah, he was crazy.
Well, Maria, what were your thoughts on Detective Carey?
Was that
the lady?
Well, she seemed to be the only one actually doing her job. Like, you know, she was the one trying to figure things out. And honestly, what got me, though, was when Eric Matthews was trying to, like, or I guess when he was trying to beat up, you know, Jigsaw for having his son, or when like things were, or when they were running out of time, I guess. And then she was going to go stop him, and everybody else was like, no, we tried it your way. Like, what the, like, I don't know. It was such a weird scene. Like, not all these men ganging up on this woman. Jesus. But, I mean, to be honest, she was kind of just your basic cop. I feel like we didn't really have a lot of scenes with her besides just, she was more like a supporting character for Eric Matthews, you know, in order to kind of get more info from him, or so, yeah, so that you can get a feel of Eric Matthews. But other than that, I think as her own person, I don't think she was much. She was very bland.
Tuan, what are your thoughts on Daniel?
I don't really have much to say on Daniel's character, because even though he was in the game, like the trap house, he was in the game with them, he really didn't do anything besides kind of be shielded by, like, Amanda and stuff the whole time. Like, he was kind of shielded by Amanda and, like, other, like, people there because he was the youngest, and he didn't really actually have to participate in anything besides, like, the ending when they were in the bathroom, like the original bathroom from the first movie. So they didn't really do anything up until that point, and once we get to the end, we discover that he was in the room, the initial room that Jigsaw and his dad in the whole time. So he was kind of out of the way of the story, because technically his story had already happened in the runtime, as the movie was, as like the time in the movie was actually going on. So he really didn't do anything in that time frame. So I can't really say I have much on him.
Maria, what are your thoughts on Detective Matthews?
Honestly, like, for, because he's, I guess, technically supposed to be, I guess, the target of Jigsaw, right? Or not, or Amanda, really. But honestly, I expected more from his character, you know? Like, I guess kind of like, I don't know. I was just expecting more. Like, throughout, like, most of the movie, you just kind of get that, you know, he's a cop. He's trying to get his son. He has a strained relationship with his son. And you don't really get much, not until the end, where they're like, oh, actually, he's been planting evidence, and he's been, like, framing people and having them go to jail and, you know, getting them convicted. And it's like,
yeah.
Right, but that part just feels so rushed that you're just like, whoa. Okay, like now I get why this is happening, but I guess it's not much of an impact, to be honest. It's just kind of like, oh, because all this stuff has already happened, and I think they like literally tell you all this during like almost like the climax of the movie, that at that point you kind of just don't care, you just want to see if they live or not, you know what I mean? So I guess his character was just bland, to be honest. I thought there was going to be more to him, or we would have gotten more from him. But I feel like the way this movie was shot, like the scenes, especially, you know, because technically it's telling like two stories at the same time. I feel like we didn't really get enough of him to really feel for him, I guess, or feel anything for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Tuan, what about you? What are your thoughts on Detective Matthews?
So, I remember when I first saw this movie, I thought that Matthews was going to stick it out like in the beginning and middle parts when he was kind of having that conversation with Kramer, but Kramer kind of used his short temper and stuff and like anger against him when they were having like their whole little talk and everything, and he was saying like, just, you know, do this for X amount of time and then we'll you know, you'll have your son back. But I also understand that Matthews was in a position where he didn't know if his son was alive or not, know if he was good. And even though we know, the audience, by the end of the movie, that Jigsaw wasn't lying, I mean, at that point in time, like no one really knew much about Jigsaw, just that he was doing like these like traps and like abducting people and putting them in situations where they most likely end up dead. So it makes sense why he would have a short temper. But also because of the way that like Matthews was with other, I almost said like inmates, but
criminals,
yeah, suspects. Other criminals, yeah, the way that he acted like with other criminals and such, like it was easy to use that to like his advantage with like the short temper that he had and using that like mentality against him with the way Jigsaw was kind of like slightly nudging him in that direction and trying to see if he was either going to like stick it out and not go that way versus what he actually did, and he didn't get to see his son.
Yeah, I felt like he definitely did it to himself. Literally, all Jigsaw said was, have a conversation with me. Just sit here and have a conversation, talk to me, and you'll get your son back. And that's literally what would have happened if he would have just sat his ass down and kept talking during that entire timing when the timer and sequence and shit was happening. The fucking box would have opened and he would have had his son. It was that simple. But because he's hot-headed and he does sneaky, stupid shit to get his arrest done, he signed his own death warrant, and that's on him. And I do think that Amanda was pretty smart to base her whole, like, big trap around him. That was pretty fucking genius. That was pretty genius. So let's talk about Amanda. Maria, what are your thoughts on Amanda?
I guess I liked her a little bit better this time around. Though, yeah, I guess watching it a second time, you do... I mean, obviously, without, like, already knowing the plot twist, but you just kind of, like... You start to realize that she does a lot of suspicious things, and it's like, how would you know about that, you know? But, I mean, I guess it was genius for basing the trap around him, but, like, I feel like she could have done better with the traps. Because, honestly, I feel like some of these traps, they really didn't, like... have much of a chance, to be honest. Or that's what I think, anyway. And I guess it's a little, like... What am I trying to say? I was going to say self-centered, but not really. But it's like, you know, for her to be part of it just so she could watch it, which I guess makes sense because that's what Jigsaw did in the first movie. But I feel like she definitely had to, like, pull a lot of strings to get what she wanted, you know what I mean? So I feel like... Well, she's an apprentice. I mean, she's getting her, you know, her... She's figuring things out, but I feel like it could have gone better. I would have expected more. Especially if it was Jigsaw. You know?
But I think, I mean, we got more of Amanda this time around. You know what I mean? We got more of like her personality. We got more of like, I guess just her. I don't know, but there's just something about her I just don't like. I don't know what it is, but maybe we'll figure it out.
Tuan, what are your thoughts on Amanda?
It definitely, so Amanda this time around, it definitely, you know, failed in her character more. Like obviously what we get at the end of this one is seeing that she's an apprentice of Jigsaw, and it also drives back to the first movie where, you know, when Amanda was getting interviewed by the detectives Tapp and Singh in the first two movies, in the first movie, and she was saying how Jigsaw like saved her, and you know, was kind of like talking him up in a sense and saying like what he did was for good and that he like saved her and whatnot. And it makes sense now why she was talking that way, because she was being like trained by him and like helping him out. Because I feel like if she, like, just say, let's just say she got out of the trap and none of that happened, I don't feel like those feelings would still be there. So it like fills in a little bit of that and how long she was working with him, due to like the timeline of the first movie and everything. So it makes a bit of sense there. But also, like, from this movie onward, it just opened up the possibilities of like who could be like the next like apprentice for Kramer, or where is this, you know, where's this gonna go from here with Amanda helping Kramer, and is she like gonna, you know, take on the mantle of like Jigsaw once, you know, Jigsaw isn't with us anymore because of his illness.
Well, since you brought up the man of the movie, Tuan, give us your thoughts on Jigsaw, John Kramer.
So, Jigsaw is he's smart. Like, I'll give him that. Like, he's smart. Like, the man, we already know the man's like engineer and stuff, but the way that this game was like crafted, especially around like Detective Matthews and like using his son and everything, but also in turn with Amanda making it another game, basically an Inception. It was like a game within a game, almost like using the other people who they put inside the trap house to like facilitate that, and then using all of that everything that happened in there to show to the police as if it was happening like real time. Like, I thought that was pretty smart. But also just the way that he was going about like his conversation with Matthews, as I brought up like earlier, kind of like nudging him in a direction that he kind of wants him to go with the way he was talking to him and everything. So I would say he's a bit smart in that, but I still always have to call out like Jigsaw's character for thinking what he's doing is like righteous almost, or that like, you know, people deserve it. Like, just because you have had like these hardships don't mean that everyone else who's going through their own hardship needs to be given one by you so that they think they're worthy to be alive. Just because Amanda did that and decided, yes, like Jigsaw is the way of life and it helped me, like, that's not a fix for everybody. Like, sure, you're an engineer, you know, like, he knows how to fix problems, but those aren't like mental problems. Those are like physical issues that he's fixing and working on. And I feel like he's trying to Jigsaw tries to apply that to his logic for what he does with these traps and like people that he's like putting in them. And it's not like a one size fits all type of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And one of my main complaints about John Kramer and in all of the movies, is his like self-appointed righteousness. Like, he's so self-righteous, and he has all these strong views on people and how they should be punished. And it's like, bro, who made you judge, jury, and executioner? Who the fuck? Who made you God? But I love his mind play, because he didn't really do anything to Detective Matthews but play into who Detective Matthew is as a person, as a cop. Like, he didn't have to, like, honestly, he didn't manipulate the situation. If you think about it, he was straightforward with him the entire time.
He was.
But knowing that Detective Matthews is going to do what he's going to do no matter what, like, he really didn't do anything. He presented a situation, and if anything, you could say he's probably a fucking beast at chess. Because he probably can guess everyone's fucking moves, and that would piss me off. I mean, I can't play chess anyway, but like, the way he's able to predict people and knowing how they're just going to give in to their default settings of self-preservation and self-righteousness and self-importance, it's just like, I hate his logic and I hate why he's doing it, but he's smart as fuck. Which is why I love Jigsaw/John Kramer as a movie villain, because we get to see his, like, methodical thought process.
Yeah.
We get to see him planning. We get to see him interacting with all the chess pieces, so to speak. Like, and we don't get that with Michael, Jason, Freddy, Ghostface. Like, it's what makes him stand out for me. But what about you, Maria? What are your thoughts on Jigsaw?
Okay, like, I agree that he is very smart. But I also feel like he set Eric up for failure from the beginning. Like, if you listen, because I literally just watched this before I saw it, before, like,
I do agree, Maria. Right?
Because in the beginning, he goes, he basically says, your son has 2 hours to live. And he presents them the live, they made the fucking feed live, even though it was a replay, right? How else would they have known that? So the feed looks live. He literally, Eric sees his son. Okay, because literally this is what happened. They see Jigsaw. He tells them to go look at the monitors. They look at the monitors. He sees his son, and Jigsaw's like, oh, your son has two hours to live. What else is Eric supposed to think? You know what I mean? And that's his son. Of course he's going to be free. Like, yeah, I mean, I do agree that Eric definitely did. He was hot-headed. He did things in a lot of, like, fucked up ways he wasn't supposed to. But in this situation, though, I feel like any parent would be like, get me to my fucking kid. Like, this is not a game, you know? You know what I mean? Like, of course Eric is gonna be wild, right? Like,
that's why like I said, like, he knew what to kind of say to him to, like, get him to, like, blow up on him, because he knows that he has a temper and that he, like, beats up, like, criminals who and all that shit like that. So he knew what to, like, do to kind of get him to that point even quicker than he already was.
Exactly. And Eric was already stressed because his son was missing, you know? And he already feels very sensitive towards his son because of their strained relationship that he's trying to fix. So he's like, you know, my son, like, I have to get to my son. So Eric is, he's already agitated. And yeah, Jigsaw over here, because he's super smart, he knows how to play people, he knew what to do to get him more riled up. So I feel like Eric never really had a chance. Like,
he never had a chance because that's Eric's personality. He literally just played to Eric's personality. He knew.
Okay, but, like, as a parent, though, do you really think you're going to sit there calmly for 2 hours just to talk to this guy as a parent? Like, not even just like Eric. Like, that's what I mean. As a parent,
the way I'm thinking about it is, like, for me, I feel like with Eric, if you take his son out of it, it could have been, a random person. It could have been something. It could have been, I don't know. I just feel like, would the situation been that heightened for Eric if his son was taken out of it? No. But would it still have been heightened because he has a sense of pride and importance and he has a great record and he will do whatever he has to do to solve the case, to beat the case? Yes. So I feel like a similar outcome would have still happened because he always has a point to prove and he has a lot of self-importance.
Yeah, but at least then Eric would have had an actual fighting chance, you know? Here, he was faced between the king of
both. I don't think he ever did. I think no matter who was in the box, no matter what, who the MacGuffin or whatever was, he would have done the same thing. It would have been a lower level of intensity, but I think it would have still played out the same.
Yeah, but if he's already in an intense, you know, an intense situation, and he's, because I feel like if his son wasn't there, I think he definitely would have had a fighting chance. I think if they wouldn't have, and they were pushing him so hard, then I feel like, I just feel like adding, okay, maybe he wouldn't have, maybe he wouldn't, right? But I feel like adding his son already set him up for failure, you know? I feel like that variable pushed it towards one end where it was like, yeah, Eric is going to fail. Whereas if his son wasn't added, it might have been a little bit more balanced, but at least it would have been more balanced. Like, I mean, isn't that what Jigsaw is all about? Like, I feel like when you, because, you know, humans are emotional. And especially, again, he's a parent, you know, he's going through a lot. Eric is going through a lot or whatever, right? Whatever Eric is going through. But it's like, I feel like any parent hearing this criminal, this serial killer, be like, just wait 2 hours and talk to me while your son is in this house with poisonous gas and with a bunch of other people who are also being given poisonous gas. And you're seeing these people kill each other. I don't think any parent generally would sit still and be like, you know what, like, fine, let me sit here and just talk to you. I feel like any parent would be like, I need to find my kid, especially when he found out that these were all the criminals that he put away. Like, his son would have been fucked. You know what I mean? And I feel like that caused him even more, like, I gotta go get my fucking son. So I'll admit, Eric is definitely terrible. Should not have done
that. You brought up a point that makes me think that the outcome would have been the same, and the height, like the level of intensity would have been somewhat high still, is because when he gets there, let's say his son is taken out of it. When he gets there and he sees the tape and he realizes, oh, I put all these people away. And if I don't beat Jigsaw, then maybe somehow at the end of this, all of my secrets and dirty dealings and corruption is going to be brought to light. I lose my job, I lose my reputation, I might have to go to jail. It would have still went the same way.
Yeah, but at least then it would have showed that it was more of like Eric's choice, you know? Like Eric chose that path versus Eric was kind of not forced, but he was kind of like thrown into it because he was like panicking because of his son, you know what I mean? I feel like, I mean, he was definitely going to fail regardless, right? But I just think if his son wasn't added, I don't think it would have been as like, it would have been more clear to me at least that he chose that path. You know, I feel like seeing that his son is there, I mean, I just think that like anyone would have been freaking out. You know what I mean? Like, it just kind of seems that they, you know, definitely like turned up the intensity for him. But I personally feel like that, I feel like they could have done it any different way. Honestly, if they would have just done the house full of people and then with like his wrongdoings coming out, I feel like that kind of would have made more sense. You know what I mean? It would have kind of made Jigsaw's point more clear.
It would have made him actually, like, because yes, he did kind of go through a trial, I guess you could say, because he was watching all of that. But if it was going on live and he had to, like, actually go there, and let's say, like, one or two of them were, like, still alive and Eric had to deal with that, that would be him facing his demons a little bit more.
Yeah, because I feel like Eric didn't learn shit from this. He was just looking for his son.
Where's my son?
Yeah, literally.
He's on Finding Nemo mode.
Oh my god. Well, yeah, I see your point. But I don't like how I was going to end that. Because I had no way to end that. Well, we have now come to our favorite part of the podcast, where Tuan gives us the interesting facts.
And that I shall. So, Saw 2 had a budget of $4 million and brought in a box office of $147 million. Some interesting facts. This film originally came from a script by the director Darren Lynn Bousman, which was called The Desperate. Saw 2 was Bousman's directorial debut. He would then go on to direct Saw 3, Saw 4, and Spiral from the Book of Saw. In the U.S. and Canada, this is the highest grossing Saw film currently. A few of the traps actually worked in this movie. The Venus flytrap could actually slam shut, turning the key would cause the gun to fire, and the blades in the razor box trap could cut someone if they were metal. To conceal the ending, most of the actors were not given the last 25 pages of the script. Only the principal actors involved in the sequences knew. There were 5 alternate endings shot as well for this movie. Although not seen in this movie, Detective Tapp doesn't die in the movie, but dies in a tie-in video game called Saw the Video Game that was released in 2009, which is set after the events of Saw, but before Saw 2. The advertising posters for the film had to be recalled on orders from the MPAA because the two separate fingers forming the number 2 in the posters did not meet the guidelines for the film's advertising. The new poster makes it more obscure. Also, posters had the film listed as being rated R when at the time the film still hadn't gone before the MPAA for a rating. The movie itself was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Horror Film, but lost out to The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Some critics' reactions. The film currently sits at a 37% on Rotten Tomatoes. Variety wrote, cooking up new Rube Goldberg torture contraptions isn't enough to get Saw 2 out of the shadow of its unnerving predecessor. Entertainment Weekly gave the film a B-, saying Saw 2 is just barely better B-flick than Saw. The Los Angeles Times called Saw 2 a worthy follow-up to its grisly predecessor. He said the story was much more focused on an endgame than the original film. And lastly, the New York Times said that Bousman delivers similar hardcore, practically humorless frights and hair-raising tension, but only after getting past a shaky beginning that plays more like a forensics-themed television show than a scary movie.
Well, enough about them. What about us? Tuan, Maria, do we cash or pass Saw 2? Maria?
I cash. I feel like... Do I cash? Hold on. I do cash. I feel like I really liked the twist, especially when you watch it for the first time and you're like, oh shit, like I cannot believe all that happened. I feel like it's different from the first movie, but I feel like as a part two, it doesn't disappoint.
For me, it's also a cash. The one thing I always want from a movie sequel, whether it's horror or adventure or action or whatever the genre is, my main thing that I want from a sequel is to expand the universe that was introduced in the first one. Like, with every sequel, the universe should be expanding, and this definitely did it. It gave us more characters. It gave us more of a backstory. It gave us more of a... Just gave us more, and the traps were bigger, the setting was bigger, the cast was bigger, the game was bigger, and it definitely paid off for me. It's a cash. What about you, Tuan? Do you cash or pass?
I also cashed this one. Personally, for me, Saw 2 is my favorite out of the series currently. And I agree with both you guys. It definitely adds a bit of lore to, like our characters, and then also, you know, calls back to the first one in a good way with the whole twist of Amanda being an apprentice of John Kramer this entire time, and also her, like, participating in the game itself. Like, we, you know, we're bound to think that she just got put back in, but it was like her, she was running the show the whole time. So that was a really good, like, twist, the way they put that in. And also, like, yes, the first movie, like, had a twist, but, like, this movie, like, solidified that you could expect that Saw is going to have, like, a twist ending at the end of, like, every movie, and it put that in your head after you saw this one. And once we go forward to, like, the other movies and everything, it definitely builds off a lot more and uses those twist endings for better or worse. But for this one, I will say it's for the better, and I cash it.
Well, we have three caches. The second one in the series so far, but will that continue next week? We don't know yet. Nor do you, because you have to join us next week as we review Saw 3. This was the one that was in... No, this wasn't 3D, right? This wasn't a 3D one, right?
That was the last one, 7.
Oh. I don't have that many memories of Saw 3. I think... And I don't know this now, and I won't know until I watch it for the review, but I don't think I've actually seen Saw 3.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites.
I think I've only seen bits and pieces, and unfortunately, like, the ending is spoiled for me. So I think I've actually only seen Saw 1, 2, and Jigsaw. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see some of those scenes that I, for some reason, keep on seeing in my head when I think of Saw 3. So should be good.
Should be exciting.
Is there anything I should know ahead of time? Because, like, you, the two of you have been very quiet about the Saw movies. Now, when I mentioned we were doing Insidious, both of you were like, oh, this was really good. People like this one. This, then both of y'all avoided saying anything about 3. So I was like, oh, shit.
Like, okay, it's not the worst thing in the world, I think, but the main, like, game that's being played in it is a bit boring, and the main person who's having to go through, because in Saw 3 we get a singular person who's going through their game, and he is a very frustrating protagonist.
And I do know that Saw 3 takes place simultaneously as Saw 2.
Yes, it does.
So this is really the movie that kicks off the confusing timeline and like the soap opera plot. You have to watch each movie so close to understand what the hell is going on. Yeah. That starts with part 3.
Yeah, okay. that kind of starts with part 3, but yeah, it's just that I personally find the protagonist in Saw 3 to be very frustrating, and the decisions made and how he decided to go about his game.
Well, I may or may not join your frustration, but we won't know yet. So join us next week, guys. Good night. The Haddonfield Horrors Podcast is a Letters to Media production. If you like this episode, please be sure to check out Haddonfield Horrors' past reviews from big franchises like Halloween, Friday the 13th, and the Chucky franchise, or one-off reviews like Us and Midsommar. You can follow Haddonfield Horrors on Instagram and TikTok, where the host posts updates and mini reviews.
Full episodes are available on several podcasting platforms. If you're listening to us on YouTube, don't forget to please like and subscribe. Hadden for Horror is produced by Mark Smart, Maria Perez, and Tuan Griffin. Edited by Mark Smart. Theme by Lethal Injections. Should we do an intro?